understand why your customers leave. Ask them why they left. Make the hard call. You didn't choose us this time. Why not? And if they say price, ask them again. Ask them what about our service was different that didn't substantiate the price, or, you know, what was it? Because it's not price. Not price. You know, if it was price, everybody would drive the cheapest cars possible, but we don't.
Hello, my name is Lauren D'Souza, and you're listening to Retain, the Customer Retention Podcast. More and more companies are wanting to focus on retaining customers, but what exactly are the powers of customer retention? And how are companies using it to keep their customers coming back for more? That's what we're here to find out.
Welcome back, everybody. Our guest for today's episode is Damon Pastulka. Damon is the co-founder and managing director of Exit Your Way, where he helps founders increase business value, prepare for sale, and then sell their businesses. His vast experience running businesses, advisory, and consulting experience have given Damon a unique perspective on turning businesses around to make them more profitable. Thank you so much for being here, Damon.
Thanks for having me, Lauren. I'm excited to be here today.
All right. Well, the way that we typically start off is getting to know a little bit more about you, giving our listeners some context. So why don't you tell me a little bit more about your background and how you got where you are today?
Yeah. Well, I got here today kind of on accident, but I'm glad I did, because I grew up on a large family in South Dakota. I was one of four boys and a sister, so five of us. Oldest one in my family, first one in my family to, I believe, in my entire family, my dad's family or my mother's family, to go to college. Growing up was pretty interesting for us because we were expected to go to college. We were going to college. All my brothers and sisters, we were going to college. And I went to college, got a mechanical engineering degree, and I went on to do a fair amount of postgraduate work. I didn't get to complete it because I had to move for a job, but I'm actually the one with the least amount of degrees in my family. So my mother went back to school because she started college before she had started a family, and went back to school and got a PhD and ended up getting a PhD in elementary education and did things. And my brothers and my sisters all have a couple degrees each. But I didn't know that I wanted to be in manufacturing. And I certainly didn't know that I wanted to be running companies. And I didn't know that I wanted to be helping people build and prepare for sale and sell businesses like I am now. But as I started out my engineering career as in manufacturing, I got lucky. I was in a really fast growing company. So I started to work there in college and worked there for, I think, 12 or 13 years. So 7 to 10 years after I was in college, I was still working for this company, but I was able to build two or three facilities for them. And the final one I built, I actually built out of the state of South Dakota in Tennessee, and I ran that for 5 years. So that was my first experience of going someplace and being able to start in a new area. I literally hadn't been there before. I moved there. We built it in a cornfield and ran it for 5 years. And then I started running the next company I ran it for an investor. It's a private owner with some investors in it. And I didn't know what that was like because it was a family business in the molding. And once I figured out how much differently the investors, or just a kind of somebody that's thinking about generating wealth with their business, thought about the business and the financial savvy and the things that I really learned from them, I was just enthralled by it. And they spent a lot of money on me. I was really fortunate. They invested in me. And I like to see that now in myself, my clients, and others investing in themselves, and taught me a lot. And when we sold that company with them, I was in my mid-30s, and I was like, this is something I want to do. I want to help owners build companies. I want to build the teams. We were able to basically change the way we did business in a 60-year-old company to take over the market. We just flipped the market on its head with what we were able to do, and we got bought. We got bought real quickly by a larger competitor. And I've subsequently been able to go in and help other investment groups and the same investment groups I've worked with before do turnarounds, do growth, do buying and selling with companies. And then in 2015, I started working with my partner now, Andrew Cross. And we had a business brokerage at the time. We were helping people sell businesses. And I got into that a little while with him. And, you know, because we had been doing it before, so I had experience. But I realized that what I wanted to do back in my 30s was needed even more than I realized in privately held businesses, because most of the business owners we were talking to, they would have a great business. They could be making millions of dollars a year, but it's not sellable because a lot of different things. You know, if you had one customer, it could be a big problem. If your team isn't strong enough and you're the owner is the one that's really driving the whole business, just those kind of things that they didn't know that really can affect your saleability. I knew it was time for us to do something. And so we pivoted a little bit with our business and started doing the consulting. So we're working through that, helping them get the value built up and get it prepared before we sell. So that's how we got into it. We're doing the same thing we were doing in the investor-owned companies, just for privately held owners, for private owners.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's a very interesting thing to be doing because you're always working with different businesses and understanding different contexts and situations. And as you know, obviously, our podcast is all about retention. So I'm curious to know that all these different businesses that you've worked with over the years, how often between those businesses do you see them coming to you for needing help with things around customer retention? And what are some of the problem spaces that you're seeing there?
Well, they don't realize they have a retention problem, first of all. People come to us, right? And they say, well, we're not growing fast enough. Especially, we work a fair amount with e-commerce companies. And this happens a lot in e-commerce, right? Especially B2B e-commerce, right? I can remember we worked with someone that supplies a lot of smaller retail locations a few years ago. And they had no idea what their loss of customers were year over year, right? So they bought for 3 years and then they were gone and they were having trouble growing. We said, okay, what's your retention like year over year? And they had a loss of like about 15%. Wow. It's like, wow. So if you want to grow 10%, you have to grow 25% just to make up for your loss to get your account for the loss, right? First of all, they didn't know that. They hadn't looked at it like that before, which was eye-opening. But second of all, then we said, what can we do to retain those customers? Because what are we doing to retain customers year over year? And we instituted a loyalty type program for them to be able to get better pricing and preferable shipping rates and some other things to be able to, you know, container load quantity discounts and things like that. So we could really help them. Then you look at your growth, you're so much easier to grow then. I'm not losing them. But it comes a lot in that. And then also, you know, even just the normal manufacturing businesses or any of the other ones we look at, that's one of the first things we do. It's like, okay, how has your customer mix changed over the years and why? Because if you see this churn of customers, it's a systematic problem. There's something wrong about your product, service, delivery, something, unless it's just a one-time use product or service, right? But most things aren't quite that way. And what we see all the time is people are thinking they've got another problem, but they really have something to do with the product itself, the service itself, or the way you're delivering that product or service.
Yeah. It actually makes a good point because it kind of shows you that customer retention, it's not just one single metric that you see slapped on after you worry about acquisition and growth and this and that. It's actually embedded in so many practices of what you're doing as a company. And I think that's the key thing here that we're trying to uncover is the fact that retention is everywhere because retention means that customers were interested enough to join your company as a customer, but also the service or the process ongoing in different ways that continues to delight them so that, hey, they're going to stick around. They're going to grow with your company. Growth comes from that retention. So there's so many different factors that go into that.
Exactly. If you've done a good job in your delivery, it's so much easier just to sell that again to them, right? To again for the product and the service to them, rather than trying to go out to a new customer that you've got to introduce yourself to them and all these kind of things. Where you and I have a relationship and you need something else that I offer, I'm a natural first choice if I've done my part right.
Exactly. You don't have to go through that whole process of selling to them time and time again, rather than someone who already knows your product. Why not give them this opportunity to continue buying with you, right?
Yeah. And when you look at this, and then I come back again to e-commerce because they measure it really well, you know, customer acquisition cost. And then you go lifetime value of a customer.
Right.
When you can drive the lifetime value of the customer up, it helps your customer acquisition cost. I mean, you don't have that maybe per new customer, you're still the same, but your raw dollars go down so much, your profitability goes up because if I can drive my lifetime value up by 50% on a customer, that business is worth far more in the long term.
No, that's a great point. And I think something that I'm curious about from your point of view with all the experience that you've had with preparing businesses for sale and then seeing it through after, I'm sure, for a certain period of time, how do you look at engaging with customers after a sale? So what are some of the do's and don'ts that you see with that? Because I feel like if I was going to sell my business and I was working with another company that it would probably be a bit confusing on how to go about doing something like that because it's no longer just your business. It's part of something else now. Processes are a little bit different. So I'm curious, what do you think are the do's and don'ts of engaging with customers after a sale? How do you go about it in a successful way?
Don't change it right away. If I'm buying from you today and you sell your company tomorrow, I wouldn't tell the customers until they asked. We encourage people to keep the same branding, keep the same everything, and keep those customers comfortable with your product and service. And then over time, slowly introduce the fact that this happened. Because if you do it right away, everybody, no one likes change, right? They're kind of, oh, great. They got sold. Now it's all going to change. But if you say 6 months down the road and I'm 7 orders into same old product and service I love, you say, oh, by the way, we just wanted to announce we've changed owners and same great service. You've seen it. We've been here for 6 months now doing our thing. And that's really, I think, one of the better ways to do it. Unless you're going to be moving into a well-known brand, right? If I went from somebody that you really didn't know, say I was making shoes and my shoe brand got bought by Nike or something, and I know they don't do that, but if something like that, then maybe you want to do it. But if we're just two normal businesses out there running, I think you just wait. I think you wait and prove it first with your delivery of products and services and continued high-level service.
Yeah. And what are some of the risks and challenges of engaging with customers after the sale? So you've got this recommendation of keeping it the same based on what's working for the company, but what's the not so pretty picture on the other side of the challenges and the risks that come with that?
It's change, right? And you may have to change some of your policies and procedures. That's one of the biggest things we see. If I'm a small company, get bought by a big company, maybe it's not Lauren anymore that's calling to talk about customer service. Maybe we've moved the customer service someplace else.
Right.
Now it's not Lauren, it's a random person that calls, that they call into a call center now. You know, those are the kind of things, those are real problems that you can run because that will turn customers off fast, they'll go away. So you really have to think about what the customer experience is going to be like post-sale. And like I said, you want to keep it the same for as long as you can and then slowly transition if you have to change it at all. Because you're messing with the secret sauce. Every business has a secret sauce and you don't know what's going to be the final straw that breaks the proverbial camel's back for that customer to go someplace else.
Yeah. I've experienced that myself and I won't name names of the companies that are part of it, but the bigger company was one where the contact and support is very hard to find. So you almost have to basically run down a rabbit hole to find the contact, which is really annoying as a customer because you sometimes just want that question answered. You don't feel like going through all these help centers and communities and things like that. Sometimes you just need a little help because you're frustrated. And company B was a smaller company that got acquired by company A. And at that time, company B always had live chat support ready to go. They were quick to respond. They were very, very helpful. They would always follow up and make sure that they provided some other idea that they could help you with. And as a founder or an entrepreneur of a small company, that was very, very helpful because you're doing so many things at once. You don't have time to spend on all these different things to figure out documentation here and there. And when this company got acquired by company A, all of that went out the window. And it actually even caused me to switch providers of said thing because of the fact that it's a small aspect, but it was worth me paying more for another service because I got that instant help. And it was worth keeping, like you said, that secret sauce of having that support ready to me because I just became a number in that first scenario that I gave you. And now it just changed completely when that company got bought out by a bigger company who did it their way. So I couldn't agree with you more because I felt it from a consumer point of view.
That's a great example. I mean, that's exactly what companies don't consider enough. And, you know, and that could have been 20, 30% of their customer base that felt that way. If you go, okay, how many of those people will actually move? And if it's significant and you're buying that business, you have to look, if I drop 15 or 20% of my revenue post-sale, that could be easily double that in my profitability, depending on how profitable I am. Just because, you know, once you get to a certain point and you're above your break-even point, your profitability climbs a lot faster. So if you think about the way financials work, if I'm anywhere even close to that, it can significantly affect your profitability. It's so dangerous to change any of your customer-facing aspects after a sale.
And I think it's so important to know what is your secret sauce, because sometimes I think it's hard for companies to know if they haven't done the full due diligence around it. Because I'm sure that company, if they knew that their secret sauce was that support, maybe they did and just didn't really care. But if they knew that their secret sauce was that support, I'm sure so many other people felt the exact same way I did, because once you get accustomed to a certain way of being treated or being serviced in some sort of way, you expect that because you're thinking, oh, they're always so great at doing this. I'm expecting this every single time. And I'm delighted every single time. And this is why I keep coming back. But I feel like if a company doesn't know the secret sauce, it could also be an issue with when they're preparing for something like a sale, because what's going to happen after that? So very interesting point there.
I mean, you just look at some of these brands. Well, your instance, it could have been they simply weighed the cost of losing customers because of the way they were changing it and figured it wasn't going to be enough for them to sustain what they were doing.
Yeah.
But you look at a brand, you know, I've got an iPhone here. And think about that and their level of service. And think about if for some reason an Android-based brand, and this is inconceivable almost, bought the iPhone brand and they decided we're going to support it like the Google phones are supported.
Yeah.
We aren't going to have our own stores. We're not going to have that. How much would that upset
the brand?
Yeah. You think about it. But that's the kind of thing that happens in smaller companies all the time. It's as simple as you alluded to. It's as simple as, for example, a regional plumbing company that's got 5 locations across the Seattle area, right? Yeah. Well, what if another company bought them and they consolidated 3 of them? So you only have 2 left. Are those customers going to call that same one that was a mile down the street that they drove by the grocery store and saw them every day and knew them, they were at the Little League or whatever the heck, you know? It changes the dynamics. So yeah, that customer, I tell you that after a transaction and the new owners come on, that they are usually very, very sensitive to not making changes because of that.
Yeah. And I guess also why else would they have bought them if they're going to go and change everything? They bought them for some reason, wouldn't they have? Mm-hmm. I think what's also really interesting about the work that you do each and every day is you're seeing a business from all these different aspects. You're seeing it before the sale. You're helping people turn around their businesses. You're helping them do something of some sort that gets them from point A to point B. And what I find really interesting about that is you probably have a very good sense or a good pulse on what are some things that are affecting customer engagement, customer retention, et cetera, because of all your work in e-commerce and the other industries that you work in. So I'm curious to know, if we focus more on the company itself and building strategies within the company, a little bit away from this whole talk of what do you do after the sale, I'm curious to know how you think technology can help improve customer engagement and what are some of the most effective methods that you've seen when you've been working with these companies.
Personalized communication. I don't care if it's outgoing. I don't care if it's customer service, and almost instantaneous too, when you look at it. If I call a company, you call a company, or even better, company's got a good enough live chat on their website that you never need to call them and they can get their problem solved faster that way. And it's available 24/7. Like I use a cell phone brand like most people do, a carrier. And that carrier, I know that if I call them up, I'm going to be on the phone for, it could be an hour. Yeah. I can go online and do their chat and I can do the same transaction in a third of that time at least, or even less. That just makes me a happier customer. If I had to do the phone call every time, I would not do it. So that's my personalization and how they've done it there. But it's really about that. It's about knowing your customers well enough too, especially in some of the healthcare work we do, just communication at the right level, right? Because I don't know anything about my problem, because so you can spew a whole bunch of medical jargon at me. But how do you take what the doctor told me and turn it into something that Damon, who's not a doctor, doesn't know a thing about medical, so I understand it. Even better yet, if you can do it like this. So I'm a fifth grader. Can you explain it to my fifth grade child so they understand it? And if you can do that, then your communication is right. And I think that's where you look at what AI can do and you look at what big data can do for us now. And you go, okay, what has Damon been here for if in the doctor setting? I've been seeing him for 3 years. What have we talked about before? And first of all, how does that personalize communication with him in person in an office visit kind of thing? And how also do I personalize that when I'm following up to ask him how things are going? Because a doctor doesn't necessarily have to send that. If they developed a good enough AI-based something or other, they could say, you're not going to tell them medical advice that's going to do anything. But you can say, hey, I've been working on this because we talked about this when you were in last time. You were talking about, how's your knee doing? Have you done the exercises? Whatever. And that kind of stuff can all come out automatically on a certain cadence that A, improves the customer's life. And I mean, this is in e-commerce too, right? It can come out. It can be as simple as, Damon, you bought coffee from us every 3 weeks for the last, 2 years. I think I should ship you some more, even if you're not on a subscription plan, right? Do you want some more? Are you about out? Or do you want us to wait a while? I mean, that kind of, it's something that simple. How many people are going to click, sure, golly, I almost forgot.
Yeah.
And this is where something as simple algorithm can help us really change the way that we do business and drive, again, like we talked about before, customer retention, long-term.
I really like that point you just said about long-term, because these things aren't just a short-term turnaround. I'm sure when you're thinking about this, it's very much for the long-term and how you continue that growth.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to grow a business, I mean, you can't just be doing one thing. You have to continually be asking customers to look at the marketplace and seeing what's happening. Mm-hmm. And that customer retention, that, I mean, just think about what customer expectations were 10 years ago with an e-commerce online ordering experience, right? Now, I don't remember back far enough, but Amazon Prime wasn't as prevalent as it was today, 10 years ago. I mean, now we just go, it's going to take 3 days to get it? What? That shouldn't be right. It's supposed to be here now at the worst, right?
Here next minute. I'm waiting.
Yeah, exactly. I want it this afternoon because I'm doing something tonight, you know? Our expectations have changed a lot and we have to be moving with them.
I think that's so important. I'm thinking of a couple of different examples that come to mind. For example, I have this one skincare brand that I buy from and they've got that personalized messaging down so well because they're not just trying to push me to buy this product every single month. They're saying like, okay, you're going to need this because it's part of your daily routine now. You've bought this enough times and you bought it for friends and family. So you obviously love the product. So they've got it down packed where when they send me a reminder, it's, oh yes, this was on my to-do list. I have to go buy that skin serum again because I just know it's going to run out. And I never want to be in a situation where I don't have any of it left and I have to go and run out to get it. So that's in a situation where I've been like, hey, they really understand it. A situation where I've been where they didn't get it so well was actually with, I'm not sure if you've seen this on your phone either, but I know that in our region right now, Apple is doing a bundle offering where Apple has Apple Fitness, Apple TV, health, games, entertainment, a couple other things, news maybe. But when they offered me that bundle, I was actually quite annoyed. I was like, I don't want this. I was like, yeah, sure. I watch Apple TV from time to time and I use the fitness most regularly. News, I don't use. Games, I will never touch. Why would I pay for this? I just don't care. And so them trying to bundle this all together for me saying it's much easier, I was like, get out of here. I don't care.
Yeah.
So yeah, I feel like it's two examples of how personalization can go really, really well because they've got that understanding so down packed. And sometimes they don't, obviously much bigger company, but still the fact remains that it can go in two different ways, right?
You said something there that really makes me want to pause for a moment because the larger companies should be doing it better. They have the resources to do it better than anyone else. And that's where I think we have a lot of smaller brands that are really, if they understand customer retention, if they understand their customers better, the cost of technology is going down so rapidly and it continues. It's always been this way. I mean, technology just keeps evolving and AI's ramping the evolution up faster. They can compete now better than the large competitors because of this, because of understanding their customers better, because they can implement faster. You don't have to swing a huge ship, you know? You got a smaller company, it means we can change. How fast can we get it done? Might be a couple months. That's good.
Yeah, definitely agree with you there. And I'm curious from your point of view, with the current state of where things are right now, you touched on a couple different things here of the rise of AI really causing a wave and causing an impact here. Actually, the previous episode I just recorded was all about the data behind the AI and how people can use it to leverage. So this whole talk is about AI right now in terms of how to use it for support and this and that and whatever. In your opinion, how do you see the relationship between companies and customer experience strategies changing in the future? Maybe it's continuing down this path of tech just really driving that force. Maybe it's something else, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on how that relationship is going to change in the future.
Well, I think that customers are going to demand smarter support. You want smarter support. And I don't care if I'm ordering an oil change kit for some obscure Caterpillar bulldozer or I'm getting a new iPhone. I mean, customers want to know exactly, and they don't want to have to call all the time. They obviously want to be able to order online. I mean, that's a huge thing. So first of all, multiple forms of being able to order. You want to be able to give it to someone that may be in my age bracket that's going to say, hey, I want to call, or I want to go and get on my computer and order from a computer, or I want to be able to order by text on my phone, or I want to see an ad on Instagram to order from it. It just really, you have to give them multiple ways to order the products they want, including, you know, in the corporate environment. This is what we see a lot in some of these larger corporate companies that have distributors and other things like that. They run into this problem of you have to allow that customer to order straight from the company if they want to, through a distributor if that's what's better for them. Go pick it up at the distributor. Look at what we can do at like Lowe's or Home Depot or one of the grocery stores. I can order online, go pick it up at the store.
Yeah.
That's a fantastic option for a lot of people. And those kind of things are going to continue to drive the companies that can give customers the ways to order the way they want and succinct customer service, knowing what you bought, when you bought it, and then getting you the help you need as fast as possible. Again, in multiple methods. I may be a phone person, maybe a chat person, maybe an online look it up kind of person, may want videos. Have it all ready. The companies that do that, it's not going to be easy because of the technology, but the technology is making it easier to do. So.
And I like that too, because it sets the tone that that's always going to be the standard. Because even as you were describing it, I would easily work for the company that did all of that, because actually sometimes I want to call, sometimes I want to live chat, sometimes I want to whatever it is. And the other day I was actually buying a domain, for example. And some of the aspects of buying a domain, you have to think about the security aspects and this and that. That stuff, I do not want to be telling that over live chat. Something feels odd about it. And I feel like I don't want to be giving that information, even though they're taking the information over a call. But the nice thing was when I talked to the people at domain.com, the live chat was just as fast as the phone call. So it was just the same, but they offered it to me in different ways. So I had live chatted them when I was setting things up and configuring things and figure out the technical details. But when I called them for the security related stuff, they were like, oh yes, we totally understand. Don't worry about it. Let's do this over the phone. And then whatever you need after this, let us know. And I was thinking like, this is something that should stay in the future all the time, because the fact is talking to someone is important no matter what amount of technology you have. And more often than not, you typically see people enter those live chats and say, talk to a person right away, because they don't want to talk to the bot sometimes. But if they can just get routed faster, it's just a little bit more helpful. So I like that, setting the precedent for having all those different ways to help people buy how they want to buy, service how they want to service, having all those different methods so that you're adjusting to the times, but then you're also keeping the traditional thing of just genuinely good business.
You know, the other thing that I've really seen recently in some companies using not even AI, but just using systems and technology better, is to make their customer service people smarter. And I don't mean like, you know, smarter like book smart down the street, but just say on that big old Caterpillar bulldozer, if we can deliver a system inside of our company that can help Lauren tell a maintenance person out in the field exactly what they need to know about some hydraulic valve that's not doing whatever, and you can go, okay, tell me what valve it is, tell you that, blah, 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 and you can walk them through what a technician with 30 years of knowledge has, a company technician with that one step higher, how much more value did you provide to that customer? And how much value is it to your company that now I've enabled my entire customer service staff to be able to answer that level of question? You've just taken your knowledge base and you've shared it with your entire company so they can be the smartest about your products possible. That is super exciting to me in the industrial space, or just with any kind of technology, because now I've enabled so many more people to be able to help so many more people with our products and services.
And you know what, even too, on top of that, I think that, and paired with the idea of being more up to speed with the customer account, can create this absolutely exceptional experience. Because the other thing that you get with technology and the shaping of the different apps and systems and processes that you can use is that if Damon has worked with client A all throughout and then does a handoff to somebody else or whatever it may be, technology does give us that integration or that integrated experience. So I can know what happened on this call, what happened on this live chat, what experience did Lauren have when she was dealing with Damon on this day, and this day, alongside that key knowledge that you're talking about.
Yes.
So it's the perfect customer experience. You've got the knowledge, you've got the context, you've got everything. And that person's like, wow, how did you know that? It's just creating the perfect storm, but in the best way possible.
It's interesting you say that. We actually have a client that's integrating a system or implementing a system now to do that for communication with all the parties. They really want to understand email, phone, text, web interface, every single interaction across the entire company, what happened between that customer and our company. You know, it's like a CRM on steroids, right? Then when you incorporate order data with that, like in the situation I was saying with that big piece of equipment out in the field, now you know what Damon bought last and what they're probably calling about, and it can bring it up. You don't even have to, the customer service person's like, hey, is this about that last order? Boom. It's like, here's comments. It's crazy. It's crazy. We go on this a long time, but it's fun stuff.
No, I definitely agree with you. And I appreciate all the different insights you brought because you have such a unique perspective on this. And that's actually the main goal that we have here with the podcast, is that we want to have these different perspectives on customer retention with these different types of experiences and these different portfolios, because yours is such a unique one and you've seen it across different companies, different industries. So thank you so much for sharing that. And before we end off our episode today, we have a last little bit, which is the lightning round.
All right, Lauren.
So first question is, if you had to create a marketing dream team, which three marketers would you choose to form it with?
I don't know enough marketing people by name. If I was going to put together a marketing dream team, I would say I want the best content writer / videographer, kind of that person, because we got to develop content. Then I want the best social media, wherever my customers hang out in the social media. That would be my second one. And my third one would be someone that knows SEO and website development really well. Because if you can get those three things working, yeah, you can do other kind of cold outreach, email, that kind of stuff. But really, if you're developing good content, it's going to drive so much traffic through your SEO and through your social media platforms where you're at. They can get to know you. They're going to find you because of the SEO and your website's developed well to bring people in. I think those are the three. You know, good content, good website, good social presence for your customer, potential customers are at.
Love it. All right. Second question. If you could give only one piece of key advice to a business who's looking to improve their customer retention right now, what would it be?
Understand why your customers leave. Ask them why they left. Make the hard call. You didn't choose us this time. Why not? And if they say price, ask them again. Ask them what about our service was different that didn't substantiate the price, or, you know, what was it? Because it's not price. Not price. You know, if it was priced, everybody would drive the cheapest cars possible, but we don't.
Exactly. Yeah. Have you ever heard that story when it's basically talking about the fact that if you have water at home, it's free. If you have it at the convenience store, or you buy a water bottle at the convenience store, it's $1. And if you go somewhere else, it's $3. But then when you go to the movie theater, this thing will cost you $7. And we don't even think twice about paying for that, because we're thinking, oh, I need water because I have my popcorn. I need to have a drink when I'm watching my favorite movie, this, that. And so it just goes to show that you just have to be in the right context and the right environment and asking the sub questions, like you said, to get that right price. So you're right. Last but not least, which brand would you love to be in charge of marketing for, and why?
If I could do it like I wanted to, I'd like to be in charge of Twitter. I think that Elon Musk has a vision, but he hasn't been able to articulate it. I don't know him personally, obviously, and I don't know his vision, right? I don't know if it could be out there. I have no idea. But I think just because of the position of the company where it's at, you're basically at ground zero. Start over, make it what you want. It could be something, because there's a lot of opportunity there with the user base.
Okay. Last but not least, before we close out today, is a piece of advice. So is there a piece of life advice or marketing advice that someone shared with you once that has always stayed with you?
My father told me this, and I didn't realize it until past few years. It's nothing's really as big a deal as you think it is. He said, it doesn't matter what it is. And, you know, there's some things, obviously, bigger than others, but it really, that's what it is. It's not as big a deal. We make things so much bigger in our head than they really are in life and drive ourselves crazy with it. We don't have to.
Yeah. I like this practice of that point alone. There's two things that I like to do. This notion of thinking, is this going to matter in 5 minutes, 5 months, or 5 years? and you really mm-hmm. genuinely ask yourself, because sure, there are a couple of things that are quite important. I actually have to
yes.
worry about maybe. But
yeah.
if it passes that test, then sure, I'll worry about it. The other thing is thinking, why am I genuinely worried about this? Because there's always a reason to come down to it. And as soon as you can break down those two barriers, I think you're good to go. So
mm-hmm.
I very much
agree awesome.
With father's advice, because I think it's important. I think it's the most key thing for keeping a clear mind. And I think it's a very simple but powerful reminder. So thank yeah. you for sharing that.
We all suffer, right? You can get really angry when somebody cuts you off in traffic, right? Because we have horrible traffic here in Seattle. And it used to bother me. And now it's, you know, you just get to the point where you go, yeah, whatever. And you just keep going on with it, because it wastes your time when you allow things to spin your brain out of control. It wastes Excellent. Your time. And the quicker you can reset, the better off you're going to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Damon, for joining me on the episode today. I know a lot of our listeners will get a lot of value out of this. So thank you so much for sharing that with them and providing all those insights and those interesting thoughts around the business and how it's getting ready for a sale, goes after the sale, and all that customer attention has to do with it. We have some very interesting thoughts coming out here. So I'm very excited for our listeners to hear that. So thank you again for joining us, and we'll catch you later.
Thank you for having me, Lauren.
Retain, the Customer Retention Podcast, is brought to you by Gameball. If you want to turn casual buyers into loyal, lifetime customers, make sure to check out the episode description to book a demo with Gameball today. Also, make sure to subscribe to Retain, the Customer Retention Podcast in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and you never miss an episode. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.